Success doesn't happen overnight, but spiritual unfoldment begins where you are today. This is Lena Ski, and I'm the hostess of the Supernova podcast, and this is your weekly invitation to greatness. And in this week's podcast, we discover that alchemy really does happen by numbers. Bridget, welcome to the Supernova podcast. It is so great to have you here between building your dream home and all the airport check-ins that you've got coming up and the book that you've got going on. It's so great to have you on the show.
Thank you for inviting me. It's lovely to be on the show, Lena.
Brilliant. Well, I think let's start with the book because it's such a powerful place, and I think the story is just going to resonate with all the supernovas and purpose-centered entrepreneurs. You've called it Alchemy by Numbers. And before we kind of get into the concepts behind it and what the themes are driving it, everyone's got a different way of looking at alchemy and how it can influence their life and that whole thing. So tell us a little bit behind the title and how that came about for you.
Okay, so I do hope the book appeals to many people that are listening into the podcast, because it really is aimed at women particularly who are becoming empowered, and particularly people who are stepping into their purpose, who are stepping into that higher guided spiritual journey, who feel that there's more to life than what's gone before. So for me, alchemy is that shifting and changing the lead into gold, the lead being our sort of egoic orientation, our identity, our life that we were born and grown up to expect, to be on that treadmill of life, doing what other people deem successful. But the lead includes our wounding, and we're all wounded to some extent. We all have the areas that we get angry about, or frustrated, or upset, or feel lonely, or feel jealous, or all of these things. So all of those lower emotions are the lead. And alchemy is about taking that base substance and not denying it or trying to fix it, but actually transmuting it into the gold. And the gold is our higher selves. That's our divine self, the soul and the heart and the part of us that came here for a journey, for purpose, for some far greater plan. And for me, that's what alchemy is. It's shifting out of that heavy, negative, fear-based emotion that we all go through and we all get caught up in, into something far greater and brighter.
That's beautiful. And I think it's such a powerful distinction, because most people in their lives, and we've had this moment ourselves, and we constantly get faced with them ourselves as well, we find ourselves in a lead-based world. And even though we're surrounding ourselves with great things and luxury and creating lifestyles that seem to be lighter, we still don't realize that we're living in a world of lead. And even if we're being highly successful, like the character in your book, we're still feeling like that element is missing, because we haven't been able to transpire that and move that into gold.
Absolutely. I think the lead is like the mists of Avalon that constantly cover over. So we see these little glimpses of light and these glimpses of enthusiasm, and we decide that we're going to do something, whatever that is, whether it's have a relationship or have a family or move to another country or go on a spiritual journey or meditate or start a business or whatever it is, that we have that glimpse of light, and then we have that initial enthusiasm, and then all the dampers come in, don't they? All the sort of, you can't do that, you're not good enough, who do you think you are to write a book? And those are the mists of Avalon that come and cover over the gold all the time. So yes, the character in the book is outwardly a very successful woman. And I know of, I worked in Harley Street as a therapist in London for a long time, and I know that a lot of my clients were very highly successful people working in the city, working lawyers, brokers, those sorts of people. But something was missing inside. And it's not really about all the material things that we gain. We think we'll be successful when we get the car and the house and the family and the husband and all the other things. And sometimes that's the case, but very often we get the things that we think we want, and all that glitters isn't gold. And we get to that point where life just feels like a big struggle that's empty. And that's really what the starting point for my book. With the central character. Just to pick up what you were saying about the title, it's a working title at the moment, so I don't know whether that will be the final title once it's published, but I loved the idea of calling it Alchemy by Numbers, because there is a whole alchemical process through the book for the central character. And it even touches on alchemy and talks a little bit about alchemy. And then the numbers theme is another theme that runs throughout the book. So the character has her sort of favourite numbers and starts to see a pattern of numbers that are coming up throughout the whole story, which are kind of signposts that she's being guided by a higher force. So there's this whole theme of numbers going on as well.
So that's the numerology part of it, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, just quickly going back to what you just said as well, I think it feels like it's such a difficult choice to make, because we want to kind of step into Gold's thing, and we see these mists of Avalon kind of coming into our life. And on one side, we have this material kind of space where we've got to get the car and we've got to get that to get happy. And then you've got a book like The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, who's telling you to drop everything. And it's a beautiful book. I actually just want to reach out and bring it back into my orbit.
Mm.
But, you know, that's almost like becoming so detached from the world and, you know, really just minimizing everything. And people still need those creature comforts. So kind of place where I see your book fitting in is like holding in that story, kind of going, there is a way that you can feel fulfilled and still be in this world.
Absolutely. I love that phrase, that it's no good being heaven sent unless you're earthly good. And so there's no point being a guru sitting on top of a mountain meditating all day long, because we need active people for this whole movement that's happening now in the world. There's a whole polarization and there's more and more people awakening to that. But we need practical people who can still be in this world, who are still grounded. So, yes, of course, all those things do matter. But the beauty of the whole alchemy process is that once we start to follow our purpose, which is our bliss, so it sort of touches on the work of Joseph Campbell, when we follow what truly brings us joy and bliss, and start to listen to that inner voice and our intuition, incredible magic unfolds, because what happens is the universe conspires to support you anyway. So you dump the Ferrari, but what happens is you get a richer tapestry of life coming in. So you have fulfillment in different areas, but guess what? The abundance is still there. You are still supported. You do still have a car and a roof over your head. And of course, you must always have a look at what's going on in your current reality to see what's real. There's no point being in daydream land. There's no point in kind of dreaming about this land there where I'm going to be fulfilled as a writer or whatever it is that you're going to be fulfilled at, but ignoring the fact that you've got to pay the rent next month. I mean, you have to know thyself, and that beautiful axiom, know thyself. And that's kind of know both selves. You have to have a foot in the real world where you do need to have those creature comforts in order to not be worrying about those, because otherwise you're worrying about survival. So you need to have that in place, and at the same time be mindful that there's a higher journey. And I think when you have the courage to step into that greater journey, different structures, old structures that are no longer serving you, will fall away, and it can feel very scary because those comfort zones are no longer there. But then new ones grow. So new structures grow to support you, to enable you to still thrive in the world and follow your joy, your bliss. And as you follow your bliss, it's contagious, isn't it? You've met someone to follow your bliss.
It absolutely is. And as you said, it really does come with courage and really stepping into that higher self. I was chatting to an entrepreneur the other day about Namiro, that, you know, the whole writing month in November.
Yes.
And she was like, oh, I've always wanted to do it, but, you know, there could be other distractions happening. And I'm thinking, you know, when you're really that committed to the thing that you want to be doing, and you anchored yourself in the reality of what you need to do right now to make a living and survive. But when you really make that conscious choice to have that purposeful life, that bliss, everything else just falls away. Everything else becomes effortless, because that's the only choice you have.
Absolutely, Lena, that's exactly right. So things that you didn't think were possible start to become possible and, you know, walls that were there fall down and doors that were closed open to you and all kinds of synchronistic events start to happen. But what happens is you need to make that commitment and stay focused on what it is you want to create. And what most people do is they think for a moment they want to do that. And then, as you said, with the person you were talking to there, that then there's all the, oh, well, I have to get this, that and the other in place first. So the ego, the identity, always thinks it needs to have the money first, or it needs to go on that writing course first, or it needs to do whatever it is that it needs to do first. And then it will go and do these other things once everything else is in place. And it's because the ego wants to know. It wants to know how things are. It wants to have a roadmap. It wants to be certain. But that's not how magic happens. And that's not how divine mystery happens. It unfolds in the not knowing. So it's about stepping out of that comfort zone. And as you said, having the courage to go, that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, when you have the courage to make that decision, as long as you are in alignment with what's true for you, and it really is, you're doing it for the right motivation because it's something you love and it really is dear to your heart or your soul, it will 99 times out of 100, in fact, I would say 100% of the time, it will unfold towards that goal, towards that end result. But what happens is when people dither, it doesn't. When you dither, it's like planting weeds in the garden. So You're trying to grow your flowers and the weeds keep strangling it, because then the universe, God, the divine, doesn't know what it is you want, because you go, I want to do this. And then you go, oh, but I've got to do this first. And there's this vacillation. And I think that holds things up.
Oh, for sure.
So I like the Hero's Journey by Joseph Campbell. And I always think that's a fabulous way of looking at the signposts of our lives to see where we are. And, you know, you can, anybody listening in can Google that and have a look. And there's lots of wonderful.
Well, we can Google Bridget right now.
We can Google it now. There's a lot of graphics that show the hero's journey, and there's different steps and different ones show them slightly differently. But it talks about how the hero always has a call to adventure. Mm-hmm. And the call to adventure will either come internally because they're bored with their life and there must be more to life than this. And they feel that they've outgrown their life and there's something more than this. Mm-hmm. Or the call will come externally. And you see this a lot in films and books, because most films and books are based on the hero's journey. So if you look at Harry Potter, he gets his call to adventure when Hogwarts sends him the letter saying he's a wizard and he's got to go to Hogwarts school. But we in our own lives get these calls. We always get these calls. We get these times when we're called to make that adventure, to make that journey. And we can always have that choice of either refusing the call and staying in the comfort zone of what we know, or stepping up. And the stepping up was always, if you look at that sequence of the hero's journey, is always accompanied by what's called threshold guardians. And they're sort of testing your conviction for the journey. They're little things that go, are you sure you're up to this? Mm-hmm. So you've got to get past those, and you've got to have the conviction and the courage to absolutely want to do what you've set out to do in order to get past those.
But just before we move on, because threshold guardians are very, I mean, they mask themselves in so many different ways, and you never know if you're dealing with one or if it's just literally it is a dead end. So I think learning to navigate and make those distinctions on, is this actually a reality thing? Is this actually a structure thing that cannot be moved beyond? Like the world is actually saying no and you can't make it? Or is this your imagination now, on your ego and all these other elements creating obstacles for you? So how do you make those distinctions?
I think that's an extremely interesting question, and there's probably a lot of answers to that. On one level, there's learning discernment, but on another level, which maybe takes it up to a metaphysical level, I believe that we're all absolutely 100% responsible for what we create, but we're just not aware of that. So we often create what we don't want because we're doing it unconsciously. And so if you, it looks as though you've structurally hit a dead end and the universe is saying no, it's actually because you've subconsciously created that. Now, you may have subconsciously or unconsciously created it because what you were going for was not actually what your greatness or your sole purpose was. It could just be the egoic version of what you thought it was, and the soul saying, no, no, that's the wrong road. So it could be something like that. But if you are absolutely in alignment with your soul purpose and with your greatness, then there shouldn't be any dead ends. So any perceived dead ends are simply something that you've created, which are either going to be a threshold golden, or they're going to be the dragons and demons stage, which is further on that hero's journey. And at that point, it's really about surrendering, because there's little us that lives in this world that we identify with has a notion of how it's going to be. So we make a decision to do something in our lives, whatever that is. And we have a notion of how that's going to be. And we've got it mapped out how that's going to be, where what the house is going to be like that we're going to buy, or what the partner is going to be like that we're going to marry, or what the business is going to be like, what we're going to sell. We have this notion. And sometimes our greatness has a completely different notion of what it is. And so I think often when people reach dead ends, they're neither threshold guardians nor demons or dragons. What they actually are is the ego stamping what it thinks it should be. And actually, if you surrender and let go, and one of the steps in that hero's journey is a dying, it's a death to resurrection, and it's a metaphorical death. And really what it is dying to the ego or the identity's notion of how it should be. So often when you die to how you think it should be, you find that dead end doesn't really exist, and there's something far better comes in, which you didn't expect, because the whole point of that pathway of greatness is that we don't know, we're in the mystery, and we have to let go of all the control and all the trying to make it work and pulling all the strings, and let our higher self pull the strings instead. It's coming from a divine source that sees a much bigger picture.
Trusting in the magic, so important.
Yes, yes, yes. And trusting in your own guidance. I mean, I know genius is very much related to greatness. The greatness is the ground of our genius, which is our own set of skills and talents that we are here to bring forth in our own particular way. And that will be a unique thing for each of us. And, you know, genius is really the ability to trust yourself 100% and to trust your own guidance.
And I love that.
Yeah. And to be able to put different things together and create from this place of pure genius and greatness. But that means that you've got to take risks and step outside of the comfort zone. Isn't easy at all. It's very difficult. It's challenging.
It is, but it takes equally the same amount of effort as it would to live that normal life, to live in that normal amount of comfort zone. The steps, yes. The steps feel just as big or just as small there. It's just the way we're wired to see it is so different.
Yes, absolutely. I remember years ago when I was a therapist, I worked with a guy who obviously is going to remain anonymous because of confidentiality. But he had been an alcoholic for a very long time, and he'd had quite a lot of addiction problems, and he'd had a really tough life. And this you'll often find when you start to work, if you're a therapist, if you start to work with people with addictions, the addiction was just originally the means of healing another deeper problem. It was actually the solution, which ended up turning into a problem. So then you get rid of the solution because they go off to AA or wherever they go. And then, of course, the original problem comes up to be healed. And he used to say to me, you know, he didn't even live in London, so he had to make a special journey to London to come and see me. And he wasn't a rich man, and he had to save up the money to come see me in Harley Street. And I remember him saying to me once, he said, "Your therapy is very expensive, Bridget. And it's hard. You know, every time I come here, I know I'm going to cry and it's going to be hard." He said, "But it's a lot less hard than being an addict and being an alcoholic." It's interesting, isn't it? A lot of people think it's easier to stay in the comfort zone of what they know. But actually, it can be absolutely draining and exhausting to live that life.
Sure. And especially in something as chaotic as that. I mean, and it doesn't even have to just be alcoholism or drugs or something like that. But being addicted to hope, being addicted to other elements, and just kind of being in such a disillusion, it's all things that are hampering you and not allowing you to thrive.
Absolutely, Lena. And, you know, when you talk about being addicted to hope and all of those things, it reminds me that sometimes people can feel very powerless. And they feel that it's not fair, or that they're the victim of circumstances, or that they're just holding out hope that this is going to happen. And it sort of makes you feel very small. If you sort of resonate, if you step into that kind of energy, it feels very insignificant, very, very powerless, very weak. And actually, when you start living in your greatness and your purpose, and you start going for your bliss, you actually become empowered. You become empowered because we are beyond this smaller us. We are these powerful beings of creative spirit, a part of the divine. We're powerful. As the famous quote of Marianne Williamson says, we are powerful beyond measure, and often we're afraid of that power. Oh, so we sit and hope, and we sit in our powerlessness instead. But it's just an illusion.
It's amazing how we co-create this world and design it that way.
Yes. Yes.
And really also just that the metaphor is just even more beautiful, because we all are books in the making. We're all writing our stories.
Absolutely. And do you know what? We're the author of our story. So if it's a story we don't like, we have the power to change it, to rewrite it, to rewrite the ending. I used to say to people, sometimes in therapy, think of your life as being a film. And you're the director of that film. And if it's a tragedy and you don't like it, change it into a comedy, because you do have the power to do that. It's not all written. Mm. I think there are certain things that are written. There are divine timings. There are certain points that we've sort of agreed to before we come into this lifetime. But we are here with free will, and we are able to create our future, and we're able to see it in different ways. So we can see it in the negative way and feel as though we're that powerless person who's just hoping for something better, that's stuck in the difficult part of the story. Or we can see that we have the power to learn from that difficult part of the story and turn it around.
Mm. Yeah, to shift out of that victim, or even just to shift out of the supporting role.
Yes.
Step into the lead of our own creation.
Absolutely. And interesting, because the book that I've written, it starts off with the woman. She's very successful, and she's got outwardly, people would be reasonably envious of her life. But she is absolutely bored with it. And she ends up going on this whole journey. And the book really is about her journey. And there's a bit in the middle of the book where it just looks like her life is in tatters. She's standing in the wreckage of her life. And the reader, I'm sure, will be thinking, oh, my God. But there's a resurrection at the end, and I won't spoil what the ending is. But life is like that. You know, if we could know that the film turns out all right in the end, we wouldn't worry about all the stages in between.
Of course. And the only way we design that is through the choices we make and the commitments we make.
Yes.
Apart from what you said of meeting those moments that have been predetermined.
Yes. Yes. Mm.
And that also kind of takes us into kind of the whole idea, which you talk about a lot, which is this land of plenty and this age of miracles. And just on the miracle thing, I read a quote today by Leonardo da Vinci. I don't know if you saw it on my Facebook. And it absolutely stumped me. Like, I just froze. I couldn't comprehend what I had read. It was him saying, I wish I could work to create miracles. And I think people just don't realize that, A, they are that miracle, and that everything that they do in their life, should they be making the right choices, or even the wrong choices, they're creating something. You could be creating miracles of disaster or miracles of absolute pleasure and bliss. And I think it's just so powerful to be able to take ownership for that, and I'm sure that that's part of the journey that your character goes through as well.
Absolutely. Yes, I love the way that you put that. And it's true that we're powerful creators. But sometimes we just create rubbish, quite honestly. We create patterns over and over, and then we say, why is this happening to me? And actually, we're creating it. And obviously, Leonardo da Vinci was absolute pure genius and really did create some fabulous miracles. So what a beautiful wish, because they say, be careful what you wish for.
True.
But yes, for me, we're entering this age of miracles. it's interesting to me that the book, A Course in Miracles, was written in 1976, but has become very popular in the last couple of years. Lots of people are starting to study A Course in Miracles. And in there, it has quite a different definition of miracle. A miracle is really seeing beyond the illusion that we've created. Because we were made in the image and similitude of the creator or God or the divine. So we were made to create. And so we're either going to create illusion, we're going to create all kinds of trouble for ourselves, all kinds of fears and worries and concerns, because that's what we're focused on. Or we're going to create something joyous and something that's true and real. And we've always got that choice of where we're going to create. And I think it's very difficult for anybody, however awakened they are, however well they've been trained, whatever, you know, even the Leonardo da Vinci's of the world, it's almost impossible, because as we said earlier, it's like the mists of Avalon. Mm-hmm. It's almost impossible to purely just create truth and beauty and wonder and miracles on a positive side all the time, because that identity is always playing out, that fearful part or that jealous part or that angry part. You can never get rid of it, because we live in this duality and we need that vehicle of orientation here. So all we can do is rise above it and turn down the volume of it and focus much more on our greatness and our purpose and create more of that. And that's really, I guess, where that book is leading to, is showing people that you can focus on other things and that your focus creates your reality. What you focus on, which is going to be what you visualize, what you tell yourself, where your feelings are, where your emotions are, all of those things are what's going to get created. And a lot of times people think that they're focused on what they want, but they're not really. They're focused on the fear that they're not going to be able to create it. So if you're it's quite an interesting thing, because if we're saying that what you focus on, you create, then you can also say that if you want to know where your focus is, look at what you've created.
Of course.
But people don't kind of look at it that way. They kind of look at things like The Secret, or they work with all these wonderful techniques and teachings that are out there. And then they go, well, I've been trying to manifest or create or whatever it is, and it's not really happening. I don't think the universe wants me to have it. Actually, no, it's because your real focus, your subconscious focus, is elsewhere.
Of course. No, I'm totally with you on that. In my coaching, we always have to look at the results and kind of go, well, what is the counter intention that you're actually creating that you're wanting to have this? And it could be negative, it could be positive, it could just be wanting to be safe, and you're creating your own threshold guardians in the process. But yes, looking at your results and grounding yourself in that is so important.
Absolutely. And that's where that whole know thyself and look at your current reality comes in, because you've got to, rather than have your, you can't always have your head in the clouds looking to the bright future. Yes, you do need to look at that to create it, but you also need to see, where am I now? What have I actually created now? What was my outcome? How did I create that? How do I want to change that? What do I want to create next? So it's always a balance between those two worlds, if you like.
And I think the next question is going to really kind of go in deeper, because you've got a background as a psychotherapist and a hypnotherapist and so many different shapes and realms and things that you've brought into this existence, is that a lot of people are just in deep fear of owning what's really happening. And how can they actually get in touch with their current reality? Because they almost feel like it's so far away from them. It is that mist.
Yes, I think you're right. I think each person has to find that. Obviously, your path is going to be unique to you. And one of the problems I think people have is they look to somebody else. So they look at somebody else's path and they go, I want that. But it's okay to want that, but you've got to find your own path. And that yes, there are fears, and those mists of Avalon's are coming, and people don't always want to look at what's really going on. In fact, people love to stick their head in the sand and go into denial about what's going on in their own lives, and like to cover that over and pretend it's all okay. And we do that because we want to be loved and accepted, don't we? We don't want to say to our friends, actually, I'm having a terrible time, my marriage isn't working. Or you want to go, oh no, everything's fine, you know, because you ask somebody how they are and they go, oh, I'm fine, and they might not be fine, but they kind of got so used to saying that, they're also saying it to themselves. So the first sort of step in all of that, I suppose, is awareness, is becoming aware, which is waking up from the illusion, waking up from the dream that everything's okay, and being honest with yourself and taking a good hard look. And the only way you're going to do that is to find quietness and stillness and listen to the still small voice within that guides. Because we live in a very busy world. We live in a very male-oriented world. We're always doing, 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 busy, busy, busy. I am just as bad as everyone else, I might say. I don't sit here being quiet and still and listening to guidance. I rush around getting the shopping and doing the washing and trying to get my blog done and set up a website and, you know, all the other things that go on in my life. And we're always busy, busy, doing, doing, doing. And all the time we're doing that, we're kind of living in the future, aren't we? We're living in the what's next on my list to tick off. And so we don't become fully present and we don't find that stillness. And when we do get to the end of the day and we're tired, what do we end up doing? Having a glass of wine and watching telly or something. So it's, I think, starting with just sitting in quietness, in solitude, in stillness, and just letting the mind be still. And really listening to what's going on. And if there's huge fear and you don't want to look at that, then you need to find tools to help you. And there's plenty of tools out there. And that might be a self-help book, or it might be going for counselling, or it might be doing coaching. There's a huge amount of resource out there.
It could be reading your book.
You know, it could be reading my book. It could be looking at your wonderful website or your work as well. I mean, there's lots of things out there now, particularly lots of wonderful alternative approaches to life. So I think it depends on that person, where they are, how bad those fears are, where they are in their life. But the first thing is awareness. And then I think asking. People forget this. It says in the scriptures over and over, ask and you shall receive. And we really don't believe that, do we? But if you just ask in the quiet stillness, ask, you know, things will come to you. It may be that somebody tells you about a course to go on. It might be that somebody gives you a book to read, that you see a leaflet somewhere and you think, oh, yes, that's the thing for me. Or that you just happen to be, I don't know, standing in a queue for something in the supermarket and somebody says something to you, or you overhear a conversation. But these things, once you've asked, they will come to you. Mm-hmm. And it's about following that little golden thread. So you just follow the first step. It's a little bit of a need to know basis. It's a little bit like a sat nav. You know, you don't need to know the whole journey. You just need to know the first step. So the first step is becoming aware, being still and becoming aware. And then when you see what those fears are, and that you don't want to look at something, then you go, okay, I need some help with this. And you ask for the help, and then the help will come, something will come, and you just keep taking the steps. I think that's the best advice I can give people, because everybody's different and everybody's got a different journey.
But it's so very true. And, you know, when we've all had moments where we've seen it play out and we just can conventionally forget the power of it, but we've all secretly asked for that front door parking spot or this or that, and we've gotten it. So it's just being in that practice of it. And then I think when you're in that practice of it, then you're not doing for the sake of doing, but you're doing things that are actually in essence with your purpose.
Yes, that's very true. And I think people do need to test the waters, don't they? They need kind of, sometimes people don't quite trust the process, so they need to kind of work with something small, start off small, and then they can see that that works. And then it is about getting into the habit of being miracle minded, I guess.
I love that, miracle-minded. So what was the big shift, if you're willing to share, that kind of led you on this journey? Because I'm sure there's a lot of inspiration in that for our listeners.
Sometimes people ask me, when did your spiritual journey begin? And I can't answer, because every time I look back, I think, oh, there was something before that. And I think the last time somebody asked me that and I really sat with it, I just thought, well, it was when I was born.
Past lives.
Yeah, we have these past lives and we're kind of born for purpose. But that's not when you become aware of it, obviously. So I think there was always signposts along the way. As a child, I used to have my imaginary friends, which I suspect were probably spirit guides. But my mum said, don't be silly, you know. So I just, you know, as all children do, we just ignore them and then decide that we're being silly. So we get conditioned to be brought up in a different way. And then I look at things that happened during my teenage years. But really, my conscious path came after I'd had my children. So I have I've got two children who still live in the UK. They're adults. They're 22 and 20. I'm immensely proud of them and I love them dearly. And it's the one thing I miss about the UK and I can't wait to see them. I'm actually going back to UK next week and I can't wait to see them. But my daughter, who's 22, was about 2 years old and I'd taken time off of work. I used to work in marketing and public relations. And I took time out of work to be a mother, be a full-time mother. And really, that's when the stillness came and the quietness. And I thought, you know, there's things aren't quite right here. And I decided I was going to sort of start to discover that something more. And I actually started off just going for counselling. And that kind of led me on a path and it led me into an alternative world, in fact, because it took me via sort of Anthony Robbins and NLP and personal development. And it took me into meditation. And I started meditating. And that, I always think, is the single most powerful tool out of everything I have done was meditating. Mm-hmm. Out of everything. Because it's almost as if everything else came out of the meditation. Because in that quiet space, you're starting to connect up with your greatness. You're starting to connect with your guidance. You're starting to see from the outside. You're at last stepping outside of the illusion or the matrix, if you like. I like that, the matrix, the film, the matrix. You know, we are in a matrix just like that film that we create from our own projections and our own beliefs and thoughts and feelings and assumptions. And when you meditate, you suddenly look, it's almost as if you're standing behind yourself and you're seeing a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And so I started meditating and that led me on a wonderful journey. And I have to say, it's been the most fabulous, fabulous journey. And it sort of, as I said, started with meditation and then it went into healing. And I trained as a healer. I became a Reiki master and then a Karuna Reiki master and then a Re'ed Sekhem Reiki master. Then I became a magnified healer. And it just kept flowing. And then I ended up training, obviously, as a therapist. At the same time, so I kind of had this parallel life of this mainstream psychotherapy training and then this kind of alternative world. And I thought it's interesting because my name is Bridget and I always feel that I bridge two worlds. I bridge this kind of scientific, logical world. I was brought up with in a large family and I'm the only girl. I have four brothers. So I have this kind of slightly male logical mind and this kind of, you know, business head, if you like, which is able to understand that logical way. And then I have this other side of me that's the healer, that's the feminine, that's the creative, that's the slightly chaotic. And I felt as though because I had a foot in both those worlds, I could bridge it. And I still feel I can bridge it because I feel now that I can kind of bridge the world between ordinary people having an ordinary life who aren't awake to any kind of spiritual journey and those who are on a fantastic stellar spiritual journey because I've got a foot in both of those. So I felt like I was bridging these two worlds and these worlds carried on in parallel through working with angels and angel readings and Merkaba and sacred geometry and all kinds of things on the one hand. And on the other hand, I was sort of working with through different approaches to therapy like cognitive behavioral therapy and NLP and hypnotherapy and Freudian free association and all sorts of things and Jungian things as well. So there was this parallel world going and eventually they met when I got to Harley Street and I kind of integrated the whole thing. Mm. And from there, I ended up what really, really thrust me, I suppose, into my path now was that I used to hold these light workers meetings at my house once a month and people would gather and I used to get about sort of between maybe 10 to 20 people would turn up at my house on the last Friday of the month, I think it was. And we would meditate and we'd send healing to the world. And then we'd have a sort of a discussion afterwards and we'd all share things. And I ended up going and having a soul contract read, which seems really wild and wacky. But the thing about this journey is when you start it, some of the things that people say, you just are so cynical and you just think, oh, this is ridiculous. But as time goes on, you open up your awareness to these things. So what seemed ridiculous a year ago now seems perfectly normal. Mm. So, you know, the soul contract reading didn't seem too stupid at that time. So I went and had this done, and I was really encouraged to change my name back to my maiden name. And my maiden name is Bridget Finclair, and that is on my birth certificate. That's what I was born with. But at the time I was married and I was Bridget Herbert. So I changed my name. And as I changed my name, I became quite ungrounded, because I had to ground the vibration. Everybody's name has a vibration, mm. and it has a numerology and it has a purpose. And I was grounding this purpose and this name. And that sent me on a wonderful, wonderful journey. And from that, I ended up handing my life over to the divine. One evening in meditation, I just suddenly went, you know what? I'm not sure that I've made such great efforts. I mean, I've achieved all sorts of things, but I really want to know what my divine purpose is. And I think it's, you know, people say God's will, you know, let God's will be done. What is all of that? What does it mean? So I just handed over in a whim, and that sent me on a roller coaster of life. And I would think I was really being fast tracked through a lot of different modalities. And as a result of that, I ended up going through quite a difficult phase of my life, where I actually left my husband and moved house several times, and I wound up living, and my children at one point went and lived with my husband, and then they came back to live with me, and I was living in a flat in Southwest London. And I finally moved in, and this divorce was over, and I'd come through the other side. And again, it always happens when I'm meditating, which is why I said meditation for me is such a key and absolutely profound fundamental thing to for anybody on any kind of journey. Mm. So I was sitting in meditation, and I just went, okay, well, you know, I've come through all of this, and I'm learning absolutely loads, and I'm awakening, and really, do you know what? I want to know what my true soul purpose is. In fact, I want to know who my true soul partner is, because I felt that my soul partner was connected to my soul purpose. Who my true soul partner is, what my true soul purpose is, and what my bliss is. Mm. And so I put that out to the divine, to God, to the universe, whatever you want to call that higher power. And that led me on even more wondrous journey. And that's when I started to learn about alchemy, and I started to learn about Joseph Campbell, and I started to learn about hermetic teachings, and how to create from genius, and how to get in touch with our purpose and our higher selves and our greatness, and how to work with greatness, and how to tune into that, and how to work with the concept of innocence, and how to be in the mystery, and how to face the demons. And all of those learnings came out of that time. And then my intuition guided me to completely give up my job in Harley Street, completely give up my flat in London, all my friends, my children, my life, my family, everything, and come to Cape Town.
Which is where I met you.
Which is where I met you. And lots of other wonderful people that I've met here. And I love it here. I must add, I'd never, ever been to South Africa in my life before I arrived with my suitcase.
Wow.
So that was an adventure.
Clearly. I mean, just goosebumps hearing it. I mean, just this part of it when you were saying that you returned to your maiden name is such a powerful analogy of returning to yourself and returning to who you really are and what your contribution is. And one of the things that came up when I heard that piece is people look at their purpose in their life and then they feel like they've achieved that. And like, okay, so what's the next level up? And what they don't realize is that they're actually just achieving their visions, because when they're actually contracting with this true soul purpose, that's a much bigger energy that they're kind of meeting and connecting with, and you're living proof of that.
Thank you. Yes, nicely put, Lena. I love it. Actually, it gave me goosebumps when you said going back to my maiden name was going back to myself. And I thought, oh, yes, she's right. You see, I didn't even think of that myself. That was fantastic.
Quickly scribe it into the book.
Yeah, sometimes we need somebody from outside of ourselves to see things objectively. And that's a very good point, actually, that within our own lives, we don't always see the jewels, do we? Don't always see the gold. We don't always see what's important and what's not. And other people very often can see much more clearly than we can. I think you're right about we're always achieving goals and we're always going, but there is always another level. And that's why, you know, in that moment, I said, what's my divine soul purpose, my true soul purpose? And I think that soul purpose unfolds and unfolds and unfolds. And we achieve whatever we're willing to take on. So, you know, at the moment in this particular phase of, I believe, by the way, that part of my soul purpose was to train as a therapist and have all those years of experience as a therapist and a healer, because it stood me in fantastic stead. And it's given me a huge amount of tools that I can work with for myself and others,
of course,
to heal and grow and awaken and expand consciousness. So that was part of my soul purpose. But it came to a point of completion. And I thought, well, what next? What next? I don't know. And so this is why I asked. And so the next thing was to come to South Africa. So I came to South Africa. And, you know, there's been a lot of, when I first arrived, there was a lot of spiritual work to be done, which was done. And then I thought, well, okay, well, I've settled in Cape Town and I've got to know people and I've recovered from virtual burnout from living in London for 30 years. And, you know, I've connected with people and I've connected with the land here, which is very important to me. And I've done a lot of spiritual work and I've done a lot of clearing of land and space clearing and, you know, working with sacred names and prayer and all kinds of things. What next, you see? So every time there's another step, and then the next thing was the book. So now I have the book and it's okay, what's next? So there's always another stage and it's always looking to complete that one and then ask again, okay, what's the next soul purpose? And I'm coming to the conclusion that everybody's soul purpose actually is to be blissful and joyous and do what they came here to do, using all their skills for the betterment and the greater for the collective, for everybody.
For sure. And just the number of evolutions that you've gone through in this lifetime has been really inspiring. And to see the next level up from that, I'm just open to imagining what that's going to be for you and what that garden of plenty is going to unfold for.
Well, I'm interested to see. I mean, the next thing that I, obviously the book is a big thing that's happening right now. And it's interesting because you think the big thing is to write the book. It took me almost a year to write the book. So you write the book and then you realize the journey's just begun. Because the next journey is getting that rewritten and then edited and then published and then out there. So that's the one of my focuses right now. But the thing that I'm actually being guided to now at the moment is to build a house. Now, this looks like it's nothing to do with soul purpose, but I'm really getting from my greatness when I tune into it that I'm buying a piece of land and I'm building a house, and I'm getting that this house is a foundation for the next stage. And I actually need to be living in this place because the land is going to support me there. The house is going to support me there for the next creation, for the next phase. So terribly exciting. I know at some point public speaking is part of my journey. And I've known that for a while, since that soul contract, which said, you know, your purpose is to speak. And so some of that voice is coming through the writing and some of it will come through speaking events and things like this podcast that we're doing right now. So that's to come, but beyond that, even I don't know. So it's going to be fascinating to watch what unfolds.
Little side note, I just sent you a Facebook message just before we went online with a little opportunity for you to do another one of these kinds of things with somebody else.
Oh, fabulous. So thank you very much.
The universe is opening.
My case.
And there it is.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it. And I'm just seeing that this house that you're talking about is going to be the home, which is going to be the birth of your next creation, whatever that's going to be. And whether it's going to be the home that you stay in or the home that just gives birth to the next level, that's all going to be revealed.
It's going to be revealed. But I tell you, you mentioned earlier Land of Plenty, and I just want to touch back on that. So Land of Plenty is actually, it's a shamanic term. So the shamans talk about a land of plenty being in another realm, but really your land of plenty is a metaphorical space or place on another realm, or in your mind's eye, out there on the inner realms, as a friend of mine used to say. It's a metaphorical place where everything that is your heart, that you love, that is your sole purpose, that really does bring you joy, truly brings you joy and bliss. Not the things you think bring you joy and bliss, but the things that truly bring you joy and bliss exist. So it's where it already exists, and it's because that place is connected to everything through time and space. So what you do is you journey to that place to have a glimpse, so that you can see what your greatness wants you to create, rather than what your identity, your small egoic self, wants to create. And then you bring that back and you go set about creating that. And that is your land of plenty. And that will shift and change. So as you create one, you create another. So in the current land of plenty that I'm creating, we create sort of choices or goals, land of plenty goals, or choice, we call them choices. And one of them is that I'm choosing to create the dream home that brings us joy and a foundation for a new life. So that's where I'm at. But the it's a piece of land which has just got the most beautiful energy and the most beautiful views as well. And I'm talking to an architect, and we're sitting there talking about exactly how I would love this house to be. So what a fabulous, fabulous opportunity. So I know that that house is going to be like the perfect house for me, on the perfect piece of land, in the perfect place, none of which I could have possibly fathomed when I was living in my flat in Southwest London.
Of course.
So it was impossible for me. I mean, we talk about the impossible. It was absolutely impossible for even for me to conceive of building a house on a piece of land near Cape Town. So so I do think it's a huge thing. And I really get the sense of how once that house is built and I'm living there, it really feeds all kinds of other purpose and greatness. Whether that's writing more books, or whether that's working with the community, or whether that's some other expression that I'm not even aware of yet.
It's just magical to kind of think about it, and again, just to see how it all unravels and comes together. It's just, it's a story in the making.
It is. It's, and as with most good stories, it's exciting and nail biting. You know, there are frightening bits. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be a hero's journey all on its own, I'm sure.
Oh, it already is. Well, Bridget, as we wrap up the call, and I'm so wow that you've got you come into this world with your own little marketing slogan, the whole Bridget thing. That was absolutely amazing. What else would you like to share with our podcast listeners, and how can they connect with you on Facebook?
They can connect with me on Facebook. I actually have two Facebook pages. There's my personal Bridget Finclair, which they're welcome to join, but there's also my author page. So there's Bridget Finclair, there's an author page, and I'd love them to take a look at that. I have literally just started a Google Blogger blog. And I am in the process of developing a new website, which is at www.bridgetfinclair.com. And that's not up and running yet, but it should be up and running, at least in its beginning form, in its nascent form, in the next few weeks. So that you can contact me there as well.
Well, we'll keep a lookout on it, and you can let me know. And once it's live, we'll update the listeners and let them know to head on over there.
Fantastic. That's fantastic. Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Well, it's been so great, as always, chatting to you, Bridget.
Thank you, Lena. It's been absolutely my pleasure.
And from what I've seen of the book, it's absolutely mesmerizing, and it's an absolute must read. And whether or not it's going to hit bestseller status in terms of conventional status, I think it's already a bestseller.
Thank you.
In the sense of the story is just so compelling.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me, Lena. I really appreciate your input. And thank you so much for talking to me.
Absolute pleasure. Chat soon.
Will do. Thank you.
Give yourself permission. Permission to be amazing, bold, generous, valued, celebrated, inspired, and transformed. Because when you choose to live from courage and be authentically real, and you choose to make the moment, meet the moment, step up and step in, being the true illuminary that you really are and honoring the supernova within, that's when you honor the invitation to greatness. For more information, head on over to www.lenaski.com.